All right, time to get some safe boating tips, and we do that every couple of weeks with Peter Freeman from the Australian Boating College. And g'day, Peter. This week we'll take a look at marine radio and how all of that works. And some may think, you know what, it's the modern world. We've all got mobile phones now. Why the radio as opposed to, you know, the more modern technology?
Oh, good morning, Mark. Yes, that is a common misconception. People go, yeah, my phone does everything. And yes, it does. It's a fantastic device. There's lots of apps you can get on your phone, your weather, your log on, your log off. But ultimately, the mobile phone's got one basic problem, and that is that it's a closed communication system. So if I've got a problem at sea and I want to ring you, firstly, I've got to know the number. And then when I do ring you, you're kind of not expecting the call. And it's a really slow, inconcise way of sort of relaying in an emergency situation. Whereas a radio, being an open communication system, all we need to know is the correct frequency. We press the button, we call for help, and everybody on that frequency is going to hear about it.
Yeah, so there could be somebody closer than the proper help. That's the wrong word. But there could be somebody else that could come and help you as well. And you're also giving that information to others as well. Oh, that's a bit dangerous, so I'll stay away, sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And more importantly, probably the most important part is that Marine Rescue are monitoring a lot of those emergency bands. So not only are you talking to everybody, but in particular, that one person who's got the big helicopters and the big boats and who you really, really want to come to your assistance.
Yeah, we need them, that's for sure. When exactly do we need to be using our marine radio, Peter?
All right, well, there's different classifications of marine radios. So you've got to go for your very basic marine radio, which is a 27 meg UHF. Now, they're quite low powered. They're only good for about 5 kilometres. They do meet legal requirements, but they are being phased out at the moment because they're not particularly efficient. They do the job, but they just do the job. People like them because you don't need a license to use them. However, if you want to get serious about your boating, you'll upgrade to a VHF radio. It's about 50 kilometres of transmission range. And then if you got really serious, you go to a HF radio, and these things literally transmit around the world. So I suppose the question is, where am I as to what radio I need? The most common is going to be a VHF radio. That's in the marine band. These are the most commonly used radios from there. And they are required, or a very good idea, everywhere, but they're legally required if you go more than 2 nautical miles offshore, so about 4 kilometres. Mm. We say if you can't see the shore anymore, you really should have a VHF radio.
I could be wrong here, but I can possibly see the one downside of having those sort of more, those upgraded ones, is that because it's covering a lot more space, which is helpful if you need some help, but are you going to also be hearing a lot of stuff that is happening 30 Ks away, 40 Ks? Oh, this is happening down at, you know, off the Tuggera Lakes. I don't care about that.
Absolutely.
I'm at Stockton.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do have sensitivity controls on most of your radios. But when you get to the very high-level radios, they've got a thing called DSC, Digital Select Calling. And what that is actually a data package. So they're all pre-formatted data packages. So if you, for example, your boat's sinking, you can press a button that says Data Package DSC. That sends out a message to everybody within that range, and it sets an alarm off on their radio so they don't have to listen to it all the time. That actually alarm triggers a response in everybody else's radio.
You mentioned licenses. What's the go here?
All right. It's quite a complicated, convoluted thing, but effectively, if your radio transmits at more than 5 watts in Australia, you have to have a certificate of operation, effectively a license. And it's a one-off one. You sort of get your training and then you go through and you have that license there. So for your basic 27 megs, you don't require a license, which is why they're still popular. But any of the long-range radios, you do require a certificate of operation. But the nice thing is you only need one operator on a boat. So if you've got a boat with a crew and you've got one person who's radio certified, that covers the entire vessel.
I think, though, that also the terminology can play a part. Certificate of operation sounds like something I've earned. A license is something I begrudgingly have to buy.
And you do have to work for them. There is quite a complicated program in learning to use them. But once you've got them, unlike a license, you don't have to keep paying year after year. Yeah. You've got your certificate of operation for life.
So you say how long would it take an average person to be up to speed and attain that?
Usually about 3 hours, 3 to 4 hours of face-to-face, and there's lots of on-radio drills and things like that. The radios do a lot more than just talk to each other, so you've got to find out not what the simple stuff is, but all that back-end things that most people don't realise radios are capable of doing.
And a lot of compliance, obviously, with that as well.
A lot of compliance as well.
Lastly, there's something else you want to mention, the EPIRB, which is the Emergency Position Indicating Radio Beacon, What are the types of these, Peter, and when do we need those?
All right. Well, the EPIRB, for short, is actually a device which is used to indicate that your vessel is in a mayday situation, a life-in-peril situation. So the beacon itself is registered to your individual vessel. So it's a bit like its own phone number. You get the vessel, you get the EPIRB, you register it. Now, when you activate, it uplinks to the GPS network, gets received at the Rescue Coordination Centre, an alarm will go off, and they'll type in the code which is being sent from there, and that will actually then tell them who's attached to the other end of that beacon. Now, because you've registered, they'll pick up the phone, they'll also make sure that everything is okay. If they don't get a response or they get a negative response, then that will cause an event to happen, a scrambling of the early rescue services from there. And now all of that literally happens in seconds. So they quote within 1 hour on the east coast of Australia. It's more like around the metropolitan area, about 15 minutes. Someone's going to be coming looking for you if you activate an EPIRB from there. They are, once again, a very good idea everywhere, but they're mandatory if you're, once again, more than 2 nautical miles offshore.
Mm. And again, obviously, you have to say 1 hour to allow for, worst case scenario, but a bit of a difference between an hour and 15 minutes, that's for sure. So they're really good stuff there.
It is very good stuff. And the good thing is, they come in like everything. They come in levels. And if you buy the good stuff, they come straight to you. If you buy the average stuff, they look for you for a little while. So I always tell people, don't go povo when it comes to life-saving equipment, because you may not live to regret it.
No, that's a point. No, the best safety equipment is the way to go for there. All right, Peter, thank you so much for that. There's a lot in it, and we appreciate you. We'll catch you in a couple of weeks.
See you soon.
Peter Freeman from the Australian Boating College, taking a look at the radios we have on board our vessels these days, and technology improving all the time.